You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Obesity in America has been regarded as a health epidemic for years, and a lot of the blame has been placed on our country's fast food culture. And fast food and obesity are more prevalent in low-income urban areas where healthier food options may not exist.
A new book finds that government policy was behind an urban fast food boom in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. Washington spent millions to help the industry expand in inner cities with the goal of kickstarting urban economies.
Chin Jo is with us now. She's a lecturer in American history at the University of Sydney and the author of the book Supersizing Urban America, How Inner Cities Got Fast Food with Government Help. Chin, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me, Veronica.
Well, first of all, how big an issue is obesity for the low-income, largely minority communities that you looked at, and how does that compare to other, maybe more affluent areas?
Yeah, well, first of all, I should point out that rates of obesity are higher across the board for people of all ethnic backgrounds in terms of socioeconomic status. So, lower-income white Americans, for instance, also tend to have higher rates of obesity, especially when we're looking at women and children, than their higher-income counterparts. In terms of African Americans, which is the group that I look at primarily, we do see stark disparities in rates of obesity, particularly among women and children, not quite as much among men, but it is a problem that disproportionately affects African Americans. I should point out that among women, even when we control for socioeconomic status, African American women have slightly higher rates of obesity than white women.
And your book makes the case that the story of urban areas and fast food begins with the riots of the late 60s. What is the connection there? Why start there?
Yeah. So first I should point out that you had fast food companies approaching the U.S. federal government for assistance in their minority enterprise initiative. So they were trying to enlist African American franchisees, and we see that as early as 1964, there was a chain called Chicken Delight, in which they approached the Commerce Department for assistance with that. But it really isn't until the riots of the mid to late 1960s, starting with Watts, which is a district in Los Angeles in 1965, that the Johns administration has this new sense of urgency about the need to economically develop African-American communities. Some of your listeners may know Johnson was also interested in eradicating poverty with his War on Poverty program, which also included rural, primarily white communities as well. But in any case, after Watts, Johnson dispatched some federal officials to the Los Angeles area and also to Oakland to investigate the causes of the riots, including an SBA official called Eugene Foley. And then the government after the 68 riots following Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination, the government again with the SBA participated in a conference to help to ameliorate the problems that were being observed in inner cities, and here you see the government partnering with fast food franchises as well as with other businesses.
Right, and this is an interesting point, the Small Business Administration, because when you talk about a fast food franchise at that time they're growing, they're not quite as large as they are. Now they're sort of these multinational corporations, but why are these bigger corporations able to get the help from the Small Business Administration?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, that name Small Business Administration connotes, kind of mom and pop businesses, right? Not necessarily these multinational conglomerates. A lot of these fast food restaurants today are owned by private equity firms. Yeah, so the Small Business Administration makes individual franchises, if they're owned by individuals or groups and not owned by the corporations, makes them eligible for these loans as long as their receipts total less than $5 million, and as long as the corporate franchisor gives their individual franchisees the quote-unquote right to earn their profits. So despite the fact that these individual franchises have to pay, you know, various franchising fees, you know, advertising fees, sometimes their buildings are leased by the corporation that the franchisor, you know, they are still seen as independent entrepreneurs.
And you write that the SBA, the Small Business Administration, seem to make a concerted effort to look for instance, African-American franchise owners. And so it could be seen as an effort to revitalize the economies of these communities, get some small businesses in there. Did it work out that way?
Yeah, well, first I should point out that the Small Business Administration, in terms of urban renewal after the 60s, they're not necessarily the ones that are primarily driving minority business initiatives. We see that starting with the Nixon administration's establishment of the Office of Minority Business Enterprise in 1969, and I should point out it's now called the Minority Business Development Agency, but it's the OMBE and various other initiatives through either the Department of Health and Human Services or the HUD, Housing and Urban Development, where minority business initiatives as well as urban renewal programs are primarily housed within those other agencies. And so has it worked out that way in terms of has the economic developments that policymakers may have been hoping for, has that happened? Well, it's interesting that there were critiques going back to the 60s. So there was an economist, a Federal Reserve economist named Andrew Brimmer, who was saying, and he was, I believe, one of the first economist, African-American economists with the Federal Reserve. You know, and his critique was, we need to focus on integrating African-Americans within the broader, quote-unquote, mainstream economy instead of limiting them, confining them to African-American neighborhoods. We need to focus on, job training and getting them kind of these corporate jobs instead of just trying to develop these small businesses within African-American communities. And also what we see in terms of job creation is that some of your listeners may be aware with the current fast food workers minimum wage efforts to raise the minimum wage in a lot of America's large cities, especially in places like New York and the Bay Area and California. It's really difficult to survive solely on fast food wages. So, the fast food companies might say, well, these wages are just meant to supplement, let's say, high schoolers' income. But what we know is that a lot of these workers, they're kind of the primary breadwinners in their families. And so it really, isn't enough, especially if you're an entry-level fast food worker in America's expensive mm-hmm. cities to earn a decent living on these wages.
I wanted to ask if you could paint us a picture of how the landscape changed if you look at those riots in the late 60s and the opening that created to bring in some of these fast food franchises into inner cities, sometimes poorer communities, sometimes primarily minority communities. What does the landscape look like in terms of how many, what the density of fast food restaurants between then and now and later?
Yeah, so before the late 60s, inner city communities were without these familiar fast food chains, and now what we see, you know, is a transformation of the urban food landscape. There are some exceptions. For instance, the RAND Corporation has published studies showing that that South Los Angeles, which is a primarily minority, low-income neighborhood relative to the more affluent West Los Angeles, for instance, in that case, they found that that South Los Angeles actually had fewer fast food restaurants, but still higher rates of obesity than the West. But Los Angeles is kind of an exception. There are still a lot of bodegas, these convenience stores that sell fast food. I'm sorry, that sell processed foods. But in other parts of the country, for instance, the South Bronx, which is primarily Latino and African American, you see just fast food restaurant after fast food restaurant, and higher than average rates of obesity. There was also a study done on New Orleans, which showed that African American communities in New Orleans had far more fast food restaurants than white communities. And just to get back to kind of your earlier question, I should qualify what I was saying in terms of job creation, and that we've seen kind of limited effects to fast food in that, but in terms of kind of creating minority entrepreneurs, that fast food has resulted in some wealthy entrepreneurs. So, for instance, the Black McDonald's Operators Association, likes to point out, for instance, that McDonald's has created more African American millionaires than any other corporation, and it's also been pointed out that a lot of the high level executives and also the franchise owners from McDonald's, for instance, they've risen through the ranks, and that not a lot of Fortune 500 companies can claim that their high level executives kind of started at the bottom of the company. So, in terms of entrepreneurs, there have been some commendable developments. Also, McDonald's likes to boast that 45% of its owner operators are women and minority. It's not clear what the breakdown of that percent is, it's qualified outcome, I would say, especially when it comes to jobs.
And Tim, we leave it there. There's a lot more to get into, but I appreciate your time and joining us today.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
That was Chin Zhou, a lecturer in American history at the University of Sydney. She's the author of the book Supersizing Urban America, How Inner Cities Got Fast Food with Government Help.